Health Committee will come to order and let the record show that Senators Josephson, Fanning, Curatola, Jones, and Fisher are in attendance, which means we have a full committee. We had two bills that were held over from the previous meeting. We're going to let those go until the next time we meet. They're not ready. This is a teleconference. I would beg the indulgence of the folks back there because I think we're probably violating fire code now, but maybe we can still move in or something so people have a way back and forth through the aisle. We are on statewide teleconference, and the areas that we'll be on, as we understand it now, are Anchorage, Bethel, Fairbanks, Juneau, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Mat-Su, Nome, Petersburg, Barrow, Sitka, Soldotna, Valdez, Homer, Wrangell, and Seward. What we'll do is rotate back and forth, but I'd like to give as much time to the folks that are listening back home, and hopefully we can limit the testimony so we don't have somebody going 10-15 minutes. We have less than a two-hour constraint. 5:30 comes, that's it. The intent of the chair today is to hold hearings until that time. If there are still more people that want to be heard, then what we'll do is have another date and have a further hearing or continuation. We're not today addressing, per se, any one piece of legislation because we're talking, there's three pieces of legislation that are discussed as being discussed. The Senate resolution, we can almost throw that out. I mean, because the Senate Bill 488 really takes the place of that resolution. And I've agreed to allow Mike Davis, the prime sponsor, Representative Davis, to lead off. Then I've agreed also Senator Sturgiewski. I don't want to make this a day where all legislators can come because it's really shortening the folks back home, shortening the new folks, and not only that, they'll have ample opportunity later. We're here all the time. Then I'll take one from Juneau and then start moving around the state and come back to Juneau. So with that, we will go with Representative Davis now. Where he got? Oh, over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll try to keep my remarks very brief. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on this important issue. The purpose of the Women's Commission is to improve the legal, economic, social, and political status of women in Alaska. The Women's Commission provides research, publications, advocacy, conferences, information, and referral services in public education. We need to continue the Women's Commission because the status of women very much still needs to improve. I'd like to give you just a few statistics. Since 1950, Alaskan women have increased in the labor force by 548%, but 62% of them are concentrated in low-paying jobs. Alaskan women who work outside the home earn 58 cents for every dollar that a man earns. And one-fourth of our families in Alaska are headed by women below the poverty line. Recent research has shown that 63 out of every 100 Alaskan marriages end in divorce. Women and children, on the average, suffer 33% drop in their per capita income following the divorce. I think until some of these issues are resolved, we still need to continue efforts like those of the Women's Commission. I would like you to urge you not to combine the Women's Commission, the Human Rights Commission, and the Office of Equal Opportunity and Employment. I have a handout which I'll provide to members of the committee, which shows, we'll take a look, it shows the various functions of those. Various commissions, and it shows that the purpose and the type of agency are different. We have, in one, the Women's Commission, an agency which does research, advocacy, and education. Another, the Human Rights Commission, deals with enforcement, and the Office of Equal Opportunity deals with administration and compliance. Very different functions. The other thing which you'll see in the fiscal note that was provided by the department is actually there's not a net savings that accrue by combining these three commissions. The other thing I'd like for the members of the committee to see is a letter signed by the majority of the House that urged that you continue the Women's Commission by passing House Bill 4. There are many people here to testify, Mr. Chairman, and across the state, and I'd like to afford those people the opportunity to testify. I'd be glad to answer any questions now or later. Thank you.
Are there any questions by committee members? Thank you. You can stay around if you want. Senator Sturgiewski.
Chairman. Senator Arlen Sturzaluski, Senate District F, and I'll remember your admonition to be short in my comments because I know there's a great deal of public interest. But this is an issue on which I feel very, very strongly. I've been a strong supporter of the Women's Commission, walked the aisles on this issue, I guess, 10 years ago when now deceased Lisa Rudd worked to see this established. I guess I felt always a special affinity for this, not only certainly as a woman, but as a widow and a single mother who faced, perhaps in better circumstances, what an extraordinary number of Alaskan women must face, and you'll be hearing that. The heart of my support for this legislation, and I'm talking about HB 4, is really lies in the women's role and the need for economic stability for women and children, and thus for Alaskan families. I think we focus an awful lot of our attention on important issues of economic development because we know that if the economy is healthy and stable, so are the people in Alaska. Economic development is for people, for families. We all know that when the economy goes bad, as it is now, that we start to see people suffer. There's an increase of violence. We have additional requests for dollars to cover some of those needs. The suicide rate is up. Child abuse soars, and we certainly have seen an increase in that. There's a tremendous cost in the term of human and both human and financial terms. The Women's Commission has done an awful lot to really help in this area of stability for economic stability of families. One of the things that the Commission did was to work on getting the displaced homemaker training provided for women who had no job skills. That was good economic development, in my opinion. When the older homemakers are able to find work, they're going to be able to contribute to the economy rather than needing public assistance and the support of that. The Commission did major research on the economic fallout of divorce. What happens when a marriage fails? What happens to the single parent that's left and to the children? Many times we see those scars and people have to pay a price all their life because they have the inadequate economic support during those difficult times. There's legislation that the Commission has spearheaded before us, and it's certainly going to help both women and children be more economically self-sufficient if it passes. It's going to mean one of the things we've found, that if people have self-esteem, they're going to be much more able to not only handle their own affairs, but to contribute to society, and I think that gets down to good, solid economic development. You know, we focus an awful lot about the construction and jobs, and we passed a bill for about $75 million to assist in that kind of thing. But what we do know that in construction, we're talking mainly about the traditional trades that have higher male workers. That would be in fishing and timber and various kinds of construction. But when that construction worker loses the job out there, who's going to support that family until the economy turns around? In ever-growing numbers, it's going to be the wife. And if her job skills are limited to low-paying jobs traditionally held by women, that entire family is going to suffer. But not only the family is going to suffer, so is the community. Because economic stability makes for healthy economies. I think that the Women's Commission has been effective, and it's been it's strong. It's brought people together. It's brought communication. It's done its job in research. One of the things that you have before you is a bill to combine three different agencies. I submit to you they have totally different missions, and in order for it to work, they need to be maintained and strengthened as separate agencies. I have a feeling this is a bill that once it gets to the floor is either going to be, I'm not a betting person, and I'm not in support of a lot of gambling bills, but I'd be willing to bet some chocolate chip cookies that the bill would be 18-2 in support or maybe 19-1. And I would certainly hope you let this go forward, let it go to the floor, let us vote on it, let us have the debate on the floor. That's where it belongs. And I appreciate your courtesy in letting me speak, but I feel so strongly. We tried to see this bill move forward. We're doing everything we can, respecting the legislative process, but it deserves to come to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You got any questions? Okay, we'll take one more from Juno Louise Howarder.
My name is Louise Howarder. I'm a wife, mother, grandmother, businesswoman, 10-year resident of Alaska, a woman of proud Indian heritage, and a dedicated advocate for families and the traditional American way of life. I, too, was a single parent at one time. I appear before you today in the role of director for the newly formed Alaska Coalition of Women. We recognize the work that the Alaska Women's Commission has done in determining the status of women, but as we determine the fiscal and financial problems of the state of Alaska, we recognize that it is time for the private sector to step forward, remembering that some women see things as they are and ask why. We see things that never were, and we ask why not. For instance, a displaced homemaker scholarship fund, a state council on families to determine the effect of laws passed on Alaska's families, a common language bill cover sheet to explain legalese of certain bills and what they truly mean, an effective statewide communication link to connect women and women's groups across the state. Another why not that became reality was an emergency stopgap program that we implemented in January of this year. Through the efforts of the coalition, we were able to drop over $3,000 in emergency food and clothing supplies to the economically depressed Prince of Wales Island here in Southeast Alaska. And through the efforts and guidance of the coalition, their own charitable organizations were instituted and are now in place. The Coalition of Women has networked with larger private enterprise groups across the state. We have seated on our board women with impressive track records showing many hours of community service, charitable works, thousands of dollars in private donations, and great dedication to their own organizations and the areas of work that they encompass. Women who now offer their expertise in a broad spectrum to the women of Alaska and their concerns and needs. We feel that there is no need for the present Alaska Women's Commission, as they have fulfilled their mission, which was to determine the status of women. We are here today to ask not what our state can do for us, but for what we can do for our state. We are here today to offer you women helping women, women through privatization for a more effective and efficient state government.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. We're going to go out on the network. We'll go to Craig and then we'll go to Nome. There is time constraint in Nome, I know that. So in Craig, with the printout here, we have Dolly Stevens. Dolly Stevens and Craig, I'm sorry, I didn't have my mic on. Then we'll go to Nome.
Hello, Ms. Dolly Stevens. I'm from Craig, Alaska.
This is Dolly.
This last year, I contacted the Alaska Coalition of Women for help for needy families here on our island. Prince of Wales Island has a great need, and last year was pretty hard on the fishing, and we have 95 children in need throughout the 23 communities here on the island at Christmas time. Alaska Coalition of Women helped me to supply toys and food and clothing for these needy families, and helped us get a food bank and a thrift shop started here. And I'm really grateful to them. I thank you very much. I don't really know about the Women's Commission because I don't have that much information on them, but I know that the Alaska Coalition of Women helped me very much in helping other people here, and now the need goes on and they're still helping.
Are there any questions of Dolly Stevens? Okay, thank you. We'll go to Nome, and I may mispronounce the name. Caleb Pangawai?
Pangawai.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. We do have a number of people here that are going to be testifying. There's many in support of the hospital for called 607 that are for hospital form. My name is Caleb Pangawai. I'm president of CORE Incorporated, which is a nonprofit corporation serving the village of the Backstreet region. I've been a formed supporter of the Alaska Women's Commission, and I felt that it's one of the more effective commissions that have been formed in the state of Alaska. I'm here to testify against Senate Bill 488 and SR 27. These two bills would not only weaken the, would not only be damaging the Women's Commission, but also be, would weaken the Human Rights Commission and the Division of Equal Employment Opportunity. Those of you who have not suffered from different forms of discrimination, racial, sexual, employment, other forms of abuse of power, do not realize how important these commissions and offices are to us. The legislature should avoid any efforts that would, in any way, lessen the protection that is given to the people of Alaska by the existence of these commissions. I would urge the legislators to vote against SB 480 and it's up for, of course, it's item 27, and support the continuation of the Electronics Commission. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll stay in Nome. I just have two people. We'll stay in Nome, then you can go offline. James Poole?
We also have other people that want to testify, but those two have time constraints. And this is Rose Poole.
Okay, we'll take those two, and then we're going to go around the state. What I would suggest is there's a new element. So instead of talking about HB4, I mean, including, along talking with HB4 standing by itself, the merger, also I think we need to address now the voluntary organization. So if you have a comment, yay or nay, on a voluntary women's organization, also say that. Or if you don't have any comments, don't say anything. But that was brought up, and you might want to address it so that we don't have to go through another time just addressing one particular area.
Are they competitive, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little confused because House Bill 4 doesn't prohibit voluntary action. In fact, probably encourages it. And they're not, I mean, it should be made clear that these are not mutually exclusive alternatives. People can organize, and we can have a women's commission too. I'm confused as to the references to voluntary action as though that was somehow hostile to the women's commission.
Okay, we're going to go to what's next year?
We have Reverend Poole here in Nome. Go ahead.
Okay,
this is Jim Poole from Radio Station KNOM here in Nome. And I'm pleased to be present today to add a few words in support for the Alaska Women's Commission and House Bill 4. It was a unique experience in my life to have been a member of the commission some years back, where I had a first-hand view of what the commission can accomplish. Now, I must admit that I'm deeply troubled and a little bit mad by the actions of the legislature, especially by some of those who openly oppose the commission by dumping it into a dozen different committees hoping to see it die. I kind of wonder if they've forgotten, on one side, those in the past who have suffered, sacrificed, and paid such a price to help women achieve the place they have in society today. And I also wonder if they really are unaware that there's a long way to go before the status of women can really be called equal. There are some examples of equality, but sometimes they're few. It seems fairly incomprehensible that some women who are among the few so favored would be against a commission dedicated to the improvement of the status of women through education, advocacy, and research. It seems like a sacrifice to the political to try to combine a bunch of commissions into one. None of them then will be effective. If half of our legislators were women, if all women received equal pay for equal jobs, if women had equal opportunity to rise to top positions in business and government, if women were no more sexually and physically abused than men, if women had an equal chance to share in the decision-making of our government and public policies, then I might say, why do we need an Alaska Women's Commission? But despite progress being made in these fields, there's a long way to go if we look honestly at statistics. I would urge you all to not only support the Alaska Women's Commission, but support it vigorously until Alaska can be proud that the status of women in this state is top in the nation. Please support House Bill 4. Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Okay, thank you. We'll go to Ketchikan. Janet John.
Ketchikan, are you online?
This is Tom Baker. The participant is talking. We'll try to figure out what the problem is.
How about if we go to another side and we'll come back to
that.
That's fine, thanks.
Okay, we will go to Soldotna, and then there's two people. We have six people in Soldotna, but what we'll do is we'll take up two right in a row, so if you can be ready, it would help a lot. The first one would be Susan Smalley, and the second would be Bobby Jackson.
Yes, this is Susan Smalley, and actually we have seven people here who favor House Bill 4, and there are an additional number of people that weren't tallied yet, apparently. Senator Fisher, members of the committee, although I realize that Senator Fisher has received dozens of letters, POMs, and personal visits expressing support for House Bill 4, I understand that he has directly expressed a specific interest in hearing from those directly affected by the work of the Alaska Women's Commission. Many of those most directly affected are here today. They, thanks to the implementation of Title IX, are at volleyball or track practice. They are busy maintaining a place for women and children when they're safe from domestic violence, more, they are living in temporary security within the walls of the women's shelter. Some of them are single moms finishing their day at a low-paying job, getting ready to rush home to young children who are unsupervised due to lack of or cost of quality daycare. They are anxiously awaiting for the mailman to bring their AFDC check so they can feed their family tonight. They're divorced and struggling to survive with minimal or non-existent child support and few other resources. They're widowed and they're without funds or job skills, wondering how they can survive. These are the people who have been and continue to be directly affected by the Alaska Women's Commission. So why is there such widespread support from such a wide variety of individuals, as well as groups such as the Kenai City Council and the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly? Does the commission's work really affect them and us? The answer is yes if our neighbor is a victim of domestic violence. The answer is yes if your daughter plays basketball, your son is taking a home ec class, or your niece is taking shop. The answer is yes if you feel it's important to recognize the accomplishments of women who've contributed to the state's economical, social, and political development. The answer is yes if your sister's husband died, leaving her without funds and without any job skills. The answer is yes if your neighbor got a dissolution and has custody of the children, but no assets and no child support. The answer is yes if your mother is trying to establish credit and is being denied. As you can see by these examples, we are affected, whether directly or indirectly, by the work that the commission has done and will continue to do with the passage of House Bill 4. And I think that it's obvious that I do not support the merger bill, but I thank you for this opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Bobby Jackson?
Yes, my name is Bobby Jackson, and I was born in Alaska in 1951 and have been a resident ever since. I'd like to speak against the Women's Commission and in favor of the other two bills, and there are seven other people in the room today who also want to testify if there's time. I'd like to speak against HB 4, continuing...
Okay, call the airline.
You want to start over again, Bobby? Somehow some airline got in the way, I guess.
Yes, thank you. My name is Bobby Jackson, and I'm a lifelong resident of Alaska. I was born in Alaska in 1951, and there are seven other people in the room today who would also like to speak against HB 4, the continuation of the Women's Commission. I'm against $250,000 funding this commission when we can't open schools in our area because of lack of funds, people are out of work and losing their homes. I feel that this commission is a duplication of services and laws already in effect and a waste of money. I think even though that they have done many worthwhile things, I think there are other ways to accomplish these same purposes. We cannot do everything for everybody. That's not the function of state government. Families have a responsibility to prepare themselves and others. And neighbors, relatives, and extended family also share in some of the responsibility of unemployment or sudden accidents or whatever. We need to support the family. We also need to help women, but I think that there are other ways to do this. What we need is women helping women, and I would like to publicly support the Alaska Coalition of Women. They can do the same job as the Women's Commission using volunteer labor at no cost to the taxpayers. I feel that they have already displayed their effectiveness by some of the things already stated. I would support Senator Fisher's SI-27 bill to consolidate these three commissions and SB-488 to eliminate the three commissions and substitute a state board until such a time as the Alaska Coalition of Women has proven that they can be as effective in meeting the needs at no unnecessary cost to the taxpayers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Let's check with Ketchikan, then we'll go to Anchorage. Is Ketchikan on board? If so, the name that we had mentioned before, Janet John?
Okay, yeah, we're back. I'm opposed to any further extension for funding of the Alaska Women's Commission. The commission does not represent my views on a variety of women's issues, but even if it did, I question whether it ought to be a state-funded entity. I think the job ought to be done by private enterprise. There already is a private group organized and working on behalf of women, as we've heard, called the Alaska Coalition of Women. Since the private sector is willing to tackle the task, I think the state should let them and not duplicate the effort at state expense. The $215,000 needed to fund the Alaska Women's Commission
can certainly be put to better use elsewhere, where it can benefit all the citizens of our state rather than a few liberal-minded women. And we have one other person in the room that would testify opposed to HB4 just as I have.
What we're going to do is the way the list comes in, Constance Griffiths in Ketchikan, if you're there, would you come on, please?
Could I defer to the young woman here who has a baby on her hip and really needs to have a time constraint?
Sure, go ahead. That would be our two in Ketchikan for the first round. Go ahead.
Thank you to Constance. Good afternoon. I'm here to address my opposition to hospital number 4.
Excuse me, could you tell us your name, please?
My name is Teresa Corbin, and I also concur with what Mrs. John has said concerning the Women's Commission. And I would like to add these thoughts. In these and future economic times, we should be saying less government instead of more. Governor Cooper has already shown fiscal irresponsibility by blowing $300,000 on a pie-in-the-sky superconductor project, which benefited no one. He wants to spend $100 million on an Alaska Scientific Foundation, which will have very few tangible benefits for the average Alaskan. And this year, he continues to support a liberal lobbyist special interest group known as the Women's Commission. He placed this special interest group under his budget, knowing the legislature would not fund it. I feel strongly the state government should not be funding in any manner a specific special interest group which does not represent all the Alaska women. If this group or a new combined group wishes to form, let it be a private nonprofit organization instead of a state-funded organization. I urge you to help in controlling state government spending. Let's dissolve the Women's Commission and put that money toward better use. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Senator
Josephson? Could I ask you, ma'am, this is Joe Josephson speaking. Would you also oppose the proposal then to merge the functions of the commission on the same theory that it's a waste of money and we should not merge it and carry the functions on in any form?
Yes, I do. From talking to some of the women here, it sounds like there are different functions. And combining them would not be really effective. I would just like to dissolve the Women's Commission and let the nonprofit Alaska Coalition of Women handle the practical needs of the women in Alaska. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I understand Wrangell has... What's the town that...
It's Wrangell, and they'll put them online.
Okay, Wrangell has a problem with some kind of reception. We have to take them right now, or we can't get them at all. So go ahead, and we'll take two from Wrangell.
This is Wrangell. Can you hear us?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
This is Sue Bell from Wrangell, and yes, there are two of us here. We'd like to, for number one, to very much oppose the House Bill number 4. I feel that the record of the Women's Commission in the past has not adequately reflected my views. I know there are some people that feel that they have been helped by some of the services which the commission has been able to do, but overall, the SR number 27, the Senate Bill number 4,
throughout other various communities and throughout the state I'm going to go ahead and speak for those 10 different organizations and agencies in behalf of House Bill 4. I'd like to thank the chair and the members of the HEP committee for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the bill. As you all are very well aware, the Women's Commission is in a wind-down year. It has passed through the House brilliantly, but gentlemen, I'm here to say that House Bill 4 must have an opportunity to pass from the committee and to be allowed to go and be voted upon in the Senate, unamended and intact. To alter it or even to substitute it with Senate Bill 488, in essence, is no bill at all. Senate Bill 488 is not a solution to any of the problems that it is stated to be. The agencies involved are very different and separate, as mandated by state statute. To even entertain the idea that the bill would be a cost-saving measure is an insult to the intelligence of the people that these agencies serve and represent. Gentlemen, the Alaska Women's Commission has been cited as being one of the most cost-efficient organizations in the state. With a staff of 3, it has reached more people throughout the state, bar none. By not allowing House Bill 4 to reach the Senate floor unamended and unchanged, we do great injustice to all citizens in the state of Alaska. Please do not let us go backwards in time. The state of Alaska is a great state. We must not digress. We must go forward. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to speak. I understand that we do have time constraints, and I would like to give testimony also on behalf of the past chair of the Alaska Women's Commission. And her testimony reads as such. Much has been said and written testified about the Alaska Women's Commission and its activities and whether or not it is meeting the needs of Alaskan women. There is something very important that needs to be addressed, but has seemingly been overlooked in your review. That is the vital role of the volunteers that have and continue to fulfill commissions. There is an implication in the paperwork from Senator Fisher that demeans the time and talent that have been generously given to the Alaska Women's Commission. Men and women alike have taken hours away from their jobs to be present at this and many other hearings and meetings. They have waited hours listening and waiting to be heard. They have come because they truly believe in the importance of the Alaska Women's Commission and what it can and has accomplished. At the same time that you ask for proof of efficiency and economy, you waste valuable time and money and personnel resources with repetitive paperwork and political ploys. Too long have the women of this state had to come hat in hand, as they say, pleading for the cause of equality. Commissioners and other volunteers have given up time from their work and family. They have used up personal leave time to accomplish many of the tasks that the commission must address. Copies of your correspondence, which I have received, show a lack of understanding or disregard for the efforts of commissioners who have served. There is no silver lining or personal gain to be experienced by serving on the commission. Women and men who serve as commissioners have done so with awareness of heavy responsibility of trying to meet the needs of Alaskan women. They have worked hard and diligently alongside the staff in all areas of advocacy, research, and education. No budget can encompass the value of their contribution. However, the need for staffing of the Alaska Women's Commission is critical. I would challenge the legislature to give up their staff and do their own research at the time you fulfill your other obligations. In order to find the root of the problems that must be researched, careful, thorough, and accurate research is essential. There must be education and advocacy at a level that can deal with the vast array of government. Keep in mind the enormity of the task. It is impossible to imagine that the Women's Commission, the Human Rights Commission, and the Office of EEO could be combined and accomplish anything substantial or even begin to address some of the grievances that must be heard and acted upon. You as legislators have more than a fiscal responsibility. You have a moral obligation to respect the needs of circumstances of the Alaskans you serve. If you will really listen to what is being said, you will hear that the Alaska Women's Commission is important because it does find ways to bring about changes in laws and regulations that affect our everyday lives. It is important because it provides an essential link of state people to its government and enlarges the voice of the people. It is important because of the conscience that reminds all of us that there must be equal treatment for all Alaskans. I would remind you that in an earlier time and culture in Alaska, mothers were expected to kill their own newborn daughters for the survival of men in the villages during times of scarcity. How far have we really come when we can so easily sacrifice the struggle of women for sacrifice in these economic hard times? Who now holds the sacrificial knife? I read that testimony on behalf of the past chair of the Alaska Women's Commission, Rebecca Chatfield, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Pat, any questions? Pat Ross?
Mr. Chairman, is it your intention to
thank you for this opportunity to hear from people in general? In nearly 10 years of its existence, the Alaska Women's Commission has accomplished numerous tasks with very small appropriations. The Alaska Women's Commission has published many definitive reports, held necessary conferences and forums, and in general been a catalyst for many of the good things that have improved the lot of women, children, and minorities. They have successfully obtained outside funding to further their projects, never participating in the usual political ploy of inflated budget requests. Now I feel that the commission is under harsh scrutiny, which is undeserved. My concern is that there is a willingness to cut first and deepest those programs which affect those who can least afford to defend themselves against the loss of representation during these times, including women, children, and minorities. I am dismayed to realize that when we most need a strong advocate for this group, which the commission has been, it is in jeopardy. I oppose the merger as proposed in Senate Bill 488 because it would eliminate the only effective means of ensuring equality for Alaskan women. The Human Rights Commission is overwhelmed with trying to meet legislative demands with an inadequate budget. The Office of EEO and the Alaska Women's Commission do not share the same constituency. EEO applies only to state employees. The Alaska Women's Commission is charged with representing all resident women. In summary, I feel that the commission's good reputation, coupled with their ability to carefully manage their funds, indicates that they should be reauthorized at a full level of funding. Presently, we cannot afford to lose the very organization that makes all of us aware of the gaps created when state funding is lowered. I urge you to pass House Bill 4 quickly in order that the other Senate committees of referral have an opportunity to participate in the mandated sunset review process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're going to swing back a little bit to Juneau, and before we go back out on the teleconference again, and we'll take them in this order in Juneau. We'll take Paula Ziegler first, then Pat Marlin.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
Before I begin, would you indulge me in that I might have Christine Callahan, Executive Director of the Commission, join me at the table?
Well, she was going to be third.
Well,
if you want to bring her up, then that'll... But I don't want to... With her, I assume there'd be some questions at least, so I didn't want to detract from you or somebody else.
It's not possible.
He's
going to get
I didn't want to say that. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and those listening across the state, I'm Paula Ziegler, currently the chair of the Alaska Women's Commission. I am certainly mindful of the time constraints under which we're all working. And on the other hand, Mr. Chairman, I'm the chair of a commission that after 10 years of a proud history has 12 weeks of life left unless something happens in the Alaska legislature before you adjourn, and so I beg your indulgence if my remarks go a bit beyond your time limit. There is something of an advantage in having a sunset process that's taking a little while. It certainly gives a person a chance to develop a sense of history, and I'd like to review a bit of that history with you concerning the Alaska Women's Commission and House Bill 4. It commences in October of 1986. When the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee issued a first letter from the auditor, which in fact recommended termination of the commission, because, he said, the commission didn't do anything measurable to quantify our effectiveness. The commission responded, yes, we do, and we proceeded to demonstrate by mentioning and proving through conferences, publications, our legislative effort, statutory review, state hiring practices, our efforts in educational equity, that we definitely are an effective organization. And also mention in passing that quantifiable is indeed a relative term. In December of 1986, the final audit report was issued. Now the recommendation was continuation of the commission, but the auditor stated that in his opinion, we did not need any paid staff. The commission responded, yes, we do. And this brings us to the issue of volunteers. Take it from me, who's been a volunteer most of her adult life, that the volunteer effort is one of the most important things that goes on in the United States of America. You could say the country was built on it. And I in no way am wanting to detract from the efforts of anyone. But when you're talking about situations in state government and when you're a state agency, I don't think it's appropriate that you need to behave on a volunteer basis. The issue of paid staff comes back again, and I notice it in my own volunteer experience, which lately has been involved with the League of Women Voters, AAUW, and the Episcopal Church. And as strong as those grassroots efforts are, and the others like them throughout our country, they too, when it comes time to impact government, are going to have paid staff. The impact on government necessitates the existence of a paid staff. And speaking as the chair of the commission, you could not find in the state of Alaska a better staff than exists with the Alaska Women's Commission. There are currently two people, and they do more than any four for a relatively small amount of money. There simply are some things, and again, with all due respect to any volunteer group, and I applaud the volunteer group, the Alaska Coalition of Women, for their efforts. They're important. But there are simply some things that you cannot manage or cope with from your dining room table or your kitchen, and I submit that the Alaska Women's Commission is one of them. Another issue that relates to staff and has been pointed out lately has to do with our contractual procedures. And there again, while it is very important when you need to target an expertise to use contractual services, that's what they're for, somebody has to manage them, somebody has to hire them, somebody has to make sure they're doing the project. And 10 volunteers scattered throughout the state are just simply not going to be able to do that. In March of 1987, returning to our little time capsule here, House Bill 4 was before the House. And when asked if they supported continuing the commission, House members overwhelmingly responded, yes, we do. In the Senate last spring, we heard a lot about the Alaska Women's Commission not having very broad statewide support, to which we responded, yes, we do, and again proceeded to strongly demonstrate through a number of statewide teleconferences, through resolutions, a number of which you have received, that indeed our support stretches. It might be interesting for you to know that this is the fourth statewide teleconference this bill has had. Each one of these costs $3,300. So I'm not a math whiz at all, but it occurred to me that another six or seven of these, and we could fund the Women's Commission. I mentioned not long ago the list of some of the groups that have joined our efforts. And they are, as I said, very diverse. Some names have been mentioned already. But in case you're not aware, we have the Alaska Bar Association, the Alaska Nurses Association, Church Women United, AAUW, the League of Women Voters, Federally Employed Women, Seroptimists, United Methodist Women, the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and most recently, in a packet of resolutions I think that were delivered to you the other day, the Alaska Conference of Mayors. Another issue raised recently in Senate Bill 488 is that the Alaska Women's Commission doesn't need its own separate identity outside the Human Rights Commission and EEO, to which we respond, yes, we do. Others will testify in greater detail as to the cost effectiveness of such a merger, but I wanted to point out one thing, and that has to do with separate identity and the importance of having your identity in your name so people who need you know where to find you. And the Alaska Women's Commission is pretty clear. The Human Rights Commission is pretty clear. The new merged agency, I couldn't tell you, but I believe that it would be very difficult to be found if you were lost. And a lot of the people we're talking about are the lost. Lastly, the ultimate question, of course, is, do we continue to believe that the women in Alaska, both the mother raising her children by herself and the mother who has adequate help and support, both the homemaker and the woman with an additional career outside the home, both the female educator seeking tenure and the student seeking a gender bias-free education, both the athlete and the spectator, the artist and the art collector, the parishioner and the priest, the subsistence gatherer and the state employee, do we believe that these women, in equal partnership with their male counterparts, are a resource deserving of the continuing support of the legislature and the continuing efforts of the Alaska Women's Commission? And the answer is, yes, we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you for an excellent statement, Mrs. Ziegler. I have the sense that in this hearing that, with the possible exception of your statement, a lot of people are talking around the subject and not getting to what is the real issue. There was, however, a witness who testified against the commission and said that the commission was too liberal, I think. And as I understand it, that's the real guts of the issue, regardless of the talk about $250,000. And I wonder what that means. I've also heard that George Bush is too liberal and Bob Dole is too liberal, so I don't know what it means to say the commission is too liberal. You haven't endorsed communal living, the Sandinistas. As you look back on your record, what is it that you think is meant by that statement or could possibly be referred to on the liberal-conservative continuum that is bothering the opponents of the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I find it difficult, too, to understand that, Senator Josephson. I think that the problem is a lack of education about what the real purpose of the commission is and the fact that economic equity is what we are really all about, and that, of necessity, at times, impact social issues. Our main focus at all times is equal access to economic opportunity. Be that liberal, conservative, I don't know.
I'd like to chime in and say that my instinct is exactly that. When they discuss equality of opportunity for women, that, I think, is what is mixed up in this dialogue of what's liberal or conservative. As a matter of fact, it may be very conservative to say that everyone should have an equal opportunity up front. Then, at that stage, we'll see how each one does.
Sure.
Senator Fanning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to take issue with my two colleagues, but I guess I don't think that that's necessarily the guts of the issue as has come over the teleconference here today. That was mentioned by one person, but I think the guts of the issue, as I hear it, is the budget and audit report that suggests that that staffing is not needed, and the specific suggestion that privatization might be a better way to cover that funding. And I, as you went through your chronology, the response in January of 1987, afterwards back from the Division of Legislative Audit was to continue their belief that that the functions of the commission could be attained without staffing. And I think that the comments that I've been hearing are not that you do it on a voluntary basis necessarily, but that that funding can be raised for that very legitimate purpose, perhaps far in excess of the funding we're talking about here. I mean, it would be easy to raise $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 statewide for the purpose in the private sector. I don't know.
The first thing that occurs to me is when you mentioned the budget and audit report is that there are two parts to that. What the auditor said and what the governor responded, and in its distribution, I'm not so sure that both parts were always seen. And the governor responded to the fact that the present staff configuration of the commission was, in his opinion, the most cost-effective way to go. It is a fine thing to talk about private fundraising, and indeed we are empowered to do that, and we will pursue it. However, who is going to do that fundraising?
Through the chair, of course, in most organizations, the executive director, who's a paid staff person, does that, and that's where the funding goes. The $200,000 or $300,000 goes to executive directors and staff, and specifically paid fundraising personnel to raise funds for many organizations. Very confident.
Mr. Chair, if I might jump in, this is Chris Callahan. I'm the Executive Director of the Women's Commission. And I just want to respond briefly to Senator Fanning. I think there are two things that you're really hitting on, Senator. One is that we need resources, and we need to figure out a way to align them so that we get the most effective utilization of them. Basically, what we have right now at the Commission is a whole compilation of resources. We have a small staff, three people. We have 10 volunteer commissioners who each put in somewhere between 100 and 200 hours a year free of charge. We have a very wide network of a multitude of volunteers throughout the state who put in both professional volunteer work, researchers who will work with us on a project for free, or who put in what we like to call the sort of the nuts and bolts and the grunt work on projects, where we need people to staff tables or to send out newsletters or whatever. We also have a very good track record in terms of going to private organizations and businesses in the communities that the commissioners and staff live in and obtaining from them specific contributions and donations for specific projects that they feel that they can support. And in addition to that, we use private contractors where we need a special expertise. We farm that out. We certainly don't attempt to have all of that expertise on staff. But I think there's one other issue, and the issue is this. The Alaska Women's Commission is a state commission. It's empowered by the state legislature to address the status of women and to make sure that there is equity for women. In our view, that is not a function that should not have state funds. As a matter of fact, it would be contradictory to say that that function should be carried entirely by the private sector. There's an emphasis, there's a message, there's a position. There's something both real and symbolic about the state saying it's your commission and the state funding it.
Mr. Chairman, hold on,
Senator Jones is there.
Thank you. Either one of you can answer this. I've heard some testimony that they're concerned about the woman who is left alone with kids all of a sudden and she has no means of support. And just, what role do you take in something like that versus what the employment office might do, or, where do you fit in?
I'll jump in, Mr. Chair.
When you answer, just give your first name.
Okay.
So at least we know who
you're talking. Chris Callahan. Unlike a service agency, a very important and essential service agency, which would help walk that woman from one service to another, hopefully one that was available, the commission's role is sort of like the difference between the big picture and the smaller picture. Both are equally important. The smaller is the level of the individual, that individual woman who suddenly finds herself adrift and doesn't know where to turn. Interestingly, one of the things that many of the women who call our office, and we get several thousand calls a year, one of the things many of them say is the thing that's really helped save them in that situation is the Legal Rights Guide for Women, which is something that the Women's Commission put out. Not any one agency took that on. It covers a whole broad spectrum. It covers employment. It covers child support. It covers public assistance. But we recognized that there was a whole variety of issues that women, particularly in rural areas and in the bush areas, not being able to afford an attorney to tell them what their legal opportunities or rights were, needed that kind of information. That's a little bit of an aside, but to get back to your specific question, we look at the larger picture. What do the current divorce laws, what effect do they have on the economic position that that woman finds herself in? What do the pension laws do? We found, when we looked into that, that homemakers had absolutely no protection for survivor's benefits. A woman could literally find herself at age 55 looking forward to a happy retirement with her husband. Her husband wanted to get $10 or $15 extra dollars a month so that they could enjoy it, selected a retirement option that disallowed survivor's benefits. And when he had a heart attack 4 months later, she was left with nothing. And the commission worked to change that, and we were able to do that. And fortunately, we didn't even have to go through the legislative process. We were able to do it administratively. So those are the kinds of things that we do. It's not likely that too many volunteer, the excellent work that the Alaska Coalition of Women that I just learned about today, the kind of work they do is incomparable and irreplaceable. But it's not likely that that group, trying to meet the day-to-day survival needs, is going to have the time, the opportunity, and perhaps the expertise in some cases, to look at the laws and evaluate the impact. I hope that answers your question.
Just I'm going to get this clear. So you don't really reach out. You're not at the service level to the individual person that has a problem. you're more of a research type commission.
Yeah, we like to say we do three things. We do research, we do advocacy, that's the legislation, the kind of pension reform, divorce reform issues, and the key, the third key, is education. That's where people like Hancock comes in. Unless women know what the problems are with the divorce laws today, unless they know that they need to remember to look at pensions and settlements, things aren't going to change. So you need the legislative change, but you also need the education. And we do a fair amount of that through our Speakers Bureau, and we used to do a lot through conferences, but we haven't been able to do that in a recent year because of our wind-down budget.
Mr. Chairman, it's not just women, though. You cover families also? I mean, you look at those types of issues?
There are very few issues that we look at that don't impact families and communities. Senator Sterjalewski mentioned economic stability. Unless the family unit has some economic viability, the community suffers economically. So our work starts with the focal point of women, but it never stops there because women don't exist in a vacuum. They exist usually in families, in groups, and in communities.
Okay. Chris, before we get lost on the question before we talked about raising money, how much dollars have you raised, say, last year, knowing you were in a sunset mode and funding was an issue that I, for one, I still keep getting POMs, letters saying that, hey, the size of government can't continue to grow, we have to bring it in line. How many dollars, cash dollars, have you generated other than from groups like the Older Alaskan Commission or contracts, I mean, soliciting membership or door-to-door or something like that?
This is Chris Callahan again. We actually don't do any kind of membership solicitation. Since we are a state agency and since we speak on behalf of all of the women in the state, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to actually have any kind of membership fees or raise donations in that way. What we do is we go to agencies and to occasionally to businesses. And I have the figures for FY86. If I could give them to you as a sample, in FY86 we were able to generate a total of $138,664, and this is in both direct in-kind dollars up front and in the value of the time donated.
Okay, I guess let me ask it in a different way. The budget doesn't show revenue of 100-something thousand. So you're talking hours value, or I said cash dollars, that we can say, well, the 200,000 that's being requested isn't really so, we're going to raise another 100,000, therefore the state needs only to provide one. But you're talking value of services, not cash dollars.
Both value of services and dollars. And let me give you just a little bit of background. When you start out the fiscal year, what you have is you have a budget to cover the basic projects which your commission has said, this is what you will do next year, and the legislature has approved it, and they've given you a budget of, say, $226,000. You have to then do all of the budgets all the projects that you said you would do with the 226 or 205. What the commission has then done is identify other projects above and beyond what was laid out, what they were funded to do. They've taken that amount of money and done those projects. We went to the National Bank of Alaska and said, we think we need a good women's history project televised. We can't afford, now, $1,000 a minute is what you budget for a low-budget video tool. We went to the National Bank of Alaska. We sold them on the project. They paid for the project, and we put our brains into it. So it was a very good public-private partnership. I'm also including in that figure, Senator, the value of volunteer hours, because, frankly, we wouldn't be able to do what we did without them.
Okay, then the costs and I'm just looking at some of the contracts that you issued, Giovanna Imperio, I don't know who she is or he is, like the $13,000, that was out of your contract money?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
the
sir.
Cinematech and Graham and Caitlin, the growth company, all these are contracts that your staff doesn't have anything to do with as far as providing service.
Oh, our staff has a great deal to do with them. The way the contracts are designed is dependent upon the staff person who designs it. The staff person then has to monitor it and implement it. The reason that we do the contracting, as I mentioned to Senator Fanning, is that if we're going to do a research project and we need the talents of a PhD anthropologist or social scientist to design the instrument or to supervise the interviewers, we certainly would not want to have a person of that level of education and experience on staff full time because the cost would be exorbitant. So by going out, we can, for in that case, $13,000, we can buy from the private sector the specific expertise that we need to make the project go. But the project is designed by the staff person.
Okay, and I know I don't want to keep this going. Maybe you can stay around, but one of the things, I don't know, I just came back from resources, and I was kind of, I guess, somewhat shocked. There's a group called the Alaska Minerals Commission, and they came up with an interim report which hits everything right on the nose. They're saying these are the bills that need to be passed. This is kind of legislation. So, and I looked, and they don't have an executive. They don't have a staff.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, gee whiz. I said, well, how much money do you need? They said, well, we had $15,000 last year. They borrow some personnel. I mean, I can say they don't. They don't have, and nothing against you as an executive
mm-hmm.
director, but they don't have an executive director. There's other commissions we've been looking at that are authorized by law, mm-hmm. and yet they have no executive director, all kinds of paid staff. And what I would do, I'll get you a copy just to look at it. I think it's one of the finest reports I've seen for a commission that's totally volunteer.
Well, along those lines, I hope, too, that you've had an opportunity to at least receive from the Department of Administration
mm-hmm.
the review that they just did of the commissions which have executive directors. There are about 16 in the state, and they did an analysis of the ranges of pay. And I would point out that most of those commissions pay their executive director at a range 26. The Alaska Women's Commission, as you know, is at the lower end of that particular range at a range 23. But I believe there are about 16 of them in the state.
Okay, then I don't want you leaving yet, Ken. Other people may have questions. As I said, you're going to be the star of the show. There's 12 weeks left, and I guess what have you done to wind down? I mean, have you released people? Have you started to close up the office, or what? I mean, because the bill is still in the hopper yet.
Well, I think the main thing that we've done in terms of administrative procedures, of course, is we've begun to do the archiving procedures that are required by state law when an agency goes out of business. We have also done an intensive job this year in what we call our Speakers Bureau. The reason for that is our belief that if this was to be our final year, what we needed to do was to get as much of the information that we have compiled, researched, analyzed, and put together, and get it out to as many groups as possible. So our Speakers Bureau has been intensive. Part of the interesting turn of events is that as a result of that, and perhaps this is the cloud and the silver lining, 40 or 50 organizations have come out in strong support of our continuation, and there are all new directions that we might be able to go in with some of those groups. The Alaska Women in Mining, for example, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Mayors Conference. These open new doors for us to move in.
Chris, has any of these organizations, and if so, I don't know,
yeah.
I assume they have, come forth and said that, in addition to a resolution, but saying we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we don't mind municipal assistance being reduced, we don't mind this being reduced, give us that as a higher priority?
I think what most of the organizations don't have any money. There are groups like the League and AAUW which do it from their kitchen tables and their dining tables. But I would say this, that most of the organizations that have addressed the revenue or the economic side of things have said, you know, we think about a dollar per capita for every female in the state is okay. We don't think that that's more than is appropriate. So they've been real supportive of continuing the commission at the level that it's been at pretty much for the last 10 years, although certainly we've taken our cuts along with the rest of the state government. We've taken about a 36% cut in the last 3 years.
Maybe you can stick around, but we do have to get some
sure.
other folks up here.
I just have one point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mrs. Ziegler, I understand there is an organization called the National Association of Commissions for Women, and that you participated in their meetings. Can you tell me how many states have commissions on the status of women or women's commissions?
It is going to be a different figure than I think the actual membership of that group. It's about 35. The group itself is composed of commissions for women on a state level, and also many of the major cities have women's commissions.
But my point is that the Alaska Commission, Women's Commission, is not a unique
by
body
no
that is...
By no means.
All right, thank you.
It is unique, Senator, a little bit. If you compare it with Idaho, they have no paid staff, but they have a Women's Commission. Puerto Rico has something like 30-something paid staff, as I understand it. But some states, their commission has no paid staff. Some do. So it's a whole mixture out there. Why don't we somehow stay though, if there's another question. Okay. And I apologize for the folks in back and the people listening back. It's getting kind of tiresome, I guess, and I don't know where we can find more seats up there. I hope we could. We're going to stay here, and I did announce the next one. I'm getting my sheets off.
Quicker switch up.
My name is Pat Marlin, and I've lived in Juneau for 15 years. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and have been a businesswoman for many years here. I am now the co-director of the Alaska Coalition of Women. I want to reaffirm what Louise had said originally, that we recognize the work that has been done by the Women's Commission. There's no question that much of their work has been excellent, but right now that we feel the need for action for women's issues, it needs to come now. I know that our state has unique problems. We can no longer ignore the needs of the majority of women in Alaska. These needs cannot be left to the same studies that are being done throughout the rest of the nation. We have ignored many of those basic needs. The past few years, because we've had extra money, we have been able to do many different things. That extra money is no longer available. Any money that is used now must be used for the best benefits for the most. Private enterprise is the way that we must go now. We know that by using the experience and the expertise that is available through the private sector, we can accomplish many things to improve the lives of many Alaska women. It just makes sense to combine these programs and do the best we can with what we have available in the state. We cannot expect all women to obtain upper mobility in jobs or business or in positions of leadership. We need to help all women. We have to make sure that nothing we do in this state excludes any group. We hope that you can see our dream, which is to better this state that we love so much. We need this opportunity to help all women express their concerns for each other. Our goals are positive, practical, possible, and pertinent to solving our women's problems. Our address through which you can join our coalition is the Alaska Coalition for Women, Post Office Box 34285, Juneau, Alaska, 99803. Our membership is $15 a year. We already have, many women have already joined us because they can see the need that we have for helping each other. If you wish to have any more information on what we're trying to do, you can call Louise Howarder at 780-4380 or myself, Pat Marlin, at 789-2607. And I want to certainly thank this committee and Mr. Fisher for listening to us today, and I hope that it'll be possible for us to be able to work together to see some of the dreams that we have for our state in these difficult times work through together.
Any questions? I have one, and maybe I didn't know what all. I should have probably asked the president of the group, but how do you see yourself fitting in, if, for example, the Women's Commission were terminated? How would you fit in and take up the role? How do you perceive that happening? And also, where's your base going to be? Where would you get your membership from?
We're getting it from all over the state, from women groups that are joining us and individuals that are joining us. We would like to, because of the capital being here, we would like to see it centered here in Juneau so that we can keep track of the legislation that we need to work with and the things that are available here for us to use. As we can see it, because of the change in the economy, more and more women are being conscious of the budget in this state. We have gone through a lot of money. I'm sure you gentlemen realize that. We are not criticizing the work that has been done by the Women's Commission. We hope that we would be able to utilize some of the work that's been done. All that we're trying to say at this point is that if we can lessen the money's used by the state, if we can in any way have private enterprise take over some of the jobs that are being funded now by the state, these are the things we need to do. We're concerned people for our state. We know the needs are here, and we know the money isn't as great as it used to be. It'd be nice if we could come in and know that there was plenty of funding, but there isn't.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Josephson.
So, ma'am, your position then is that you're not critical of the commission, but you just want to spare the state that money and encourage volunteerism. Do I understand that right?
I appreciate the work that has been done by the commission as far as all of the studies and all have done, but I do see that there needs to be more action taken and actual help for individual women.
If the commission were free, if the money issue was not there, would you see your activities and the commission's activities as being compatible or supplementary or complementary or incompatible?
You know, that's a real difficult question to ask me, because I would have to kind of evaluate what my answer would be, because there are some things that I would do completely differently than the Women's Commission has. The reason that I started this was because I have things that are that I would prioritize that perhaps they haven't. My difficulty with answering the question is I'd like you to give me a chance to evaluate both things a little closer, because I this question had not ever come up before, and I haven't really prepared for it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I have three sheets I'm reading off. The first sheet people signed up, I've been kind of cheating a little bit and going to the second, and that's how we got Paula Ziegler on, because we have three, and so I'm going to go with the one yet as... And I'm a Amelia Endor. Is she here?
My name is Amelia Endor, and I'm here because I've watched the Women's Commission. And they've done okay, but they didn't do a great job when it came to displaced homemakers. And as a homemaker, and as a person who deals with a lot of different people across the state meeting needs, of especially children, I'm finding that we've got a lot of women out there who need help. It's all well and good to talk about coming up here and changing a law when I've got a mother on the street who's hungry, when I get a story at Christmas time from Craig, Alaska, that says, "The reason I'm alive this Christmas day is because I thought the toys were a joke coming in, and I was thinking that it was nice if we weren't alive tomorrow morning, and I was contemplating suicide, along with killing my children, because Christmas was a disaster. But I'm alive today because you cared. There were toys, there was food, there was clothing for my kids." We can't reach women with lots of education programs and other things when their first priority is, "My kids are hungry." We've got a lot of hungry people in the state. Believe me, I know. I run the 4-H toy drive here in Juneau, and we took care of 1,000 kids throughout Southeast Alaska. And the stories from all over that area were of depression, not enough money in the house, not enough food in the house. We're talking about Haines, Plowock, little towns all across Southeast. We have got to set up programs that will take away, first of all, the need for immediate relief. To that, we have to add programs that will train displaced homemakers. Not the lady with the bachelor's degree that's volunteered all her life, but the lady who got pregnant at 17, has three kids, husband beat her, and he left home. Or she ended up in a shelter. We have got to meet immediate needs, and the private sector has got to come up with training funds. And only the private sector can come up with those training funds. Because if you do it, we've all seen what happened to CETA and some of the other great ideas for training. We need immediate relief for women. I'm reminded that my mother sat before a Senate hearing in Colorado in 1972, and there was this thing on the board called disillusionment of marriage. My mother sat there and she said, "I don't think you better pass this." And the reason she said, "I don't think you better pass this," is because disillusionment of marriage is going to cause women a lot of problems. And the liberals around the state said, "How dare you say that? How dare you speak out against the disillusionment of marriage? You're old-fashioned. What do you mean you want it?" My mother kept saying, "Wait a minute. If you don't tell the judge what a lousy, rotten creep he is, they're never going to go after child support. They're never going to do all of this. You're going to impoverish women." Now, in 1988, what do I hear? My mother's words. Only they're coming out of people who were saying, "We need disillusionment of marriage." I look at you and I have to say, we've got some problems. But if the private sector doesn't answer those problems, we're never going to get a final answer. The Displaced Homemakers Program was a great state program that failed miserably. Disillusionment of marriage failed miserably. How many more times are you going to try to answer the questions of what a woman needs in the economy without the private sector coming forward and taking its role and responsibility? You can't legislate to businesses what they're going to do. We have to change the business community in the business community. And if women are ever going to be economically equal, it's the business community that is going to have to make those changes. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We're going to just go out a few minutes if we can on the line, and a little bit of prejudice here, but we're going to go to Homer. And the only reason it's a little bit of prejudice, it happens to be my office in Homer. It's now being used by the LIO, and we got to have some use for it. So in Homer, we have Carol Swartz.
This is Charlene, the moderator. Carol did have to leave.
Yes.
If she could vote yes on HB4.
Okay, thanks. That shows an efficient office, I guess. Okay, then we'll go to... I really feel bad because even the Matt Sue, we had 11 people there alone. What we'll do there is, if we can, real quick, out of respect for past representatives and senators, we'll take Katie Hurley first, who happened to be a representative, and then Edna DeVries, who happened to be a state senator. So come on in, Palmer. Is it Palmer, Jake? Matt Sue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, and Human Services, for the record, my name is Katie Hurley. I'm the Vice Chair of the Alaska State Human Rights Commission. A lifelong Alaskan parent of three Alaskans, I've also served as President of the State Board of Education for 7 years and Executive Director of the Commission on the Status of Women for 3 years, and of course, a State Representative. Today, I'm representing the Human Rights Commission and speaking on behalf of the Senate Commissioners, most of whom are present at the Legislative Information Offices in their communities. Kevin Solomon and Barrow, Jim Chase and Juno, Doris Volsky and Ketchikan, Sandra Hendricks and Ruthie King in Fairbanks, Esther Winneke is out of state, and Janet Bradley is in Anchorage. The Human Rights Commission is opposed to legislation merging the Alaska State Human Rights Commission, the Office of Equal Employment Opportunity, and the Alaska Women's Commission. These three agencies deal directly with people's daily lives and serve to protect their fundamental rights guaranteed by our state constitution. They serve Alaskans who have been historically deprived of equal opportunity in all aspects of Alaskan society. These programs have succeeded thus far in spite of their chronic underfunding, even in times of economic boom, because the men and women who serve on these commissions are dedicated to the cause of human rights, justice, and equity. These commissioners give freely their time, reaching out in their communities to help those who have been denied their rights to jobs, pay equity, fair treatment in the workplace, fair housing, equal credit opportunities, and access to governmental services. Now what is proposed in SB 488 is replacing the 7 Human Rights Commissioners and the 10 Commissioners of the Women's Commission with what can only be called a bureaucratic board of 3 commissioners who will be further removed from the public they are supposed to serve. From our combined experience of over 26 years of service on the Human Rights Commission, we believe these 3 commissioners will need to work full-time to carry out the provisions of the proposed law and deal with all the human rights issues. This may work in the lower 48 where distances are not great and population not widespread, but it is simply impossible in the state of Alaska. At a time when nationally the cause for human rights is growing among the populace and is supported overwhelmingly in the Congress of the United States, and I am referring specifically to the overturning of President Reagan's veto of the Civil Rights Restoration Act, it is unthinkable that the great state of Alaska would shrink from its hitherto leadership role in civil rights by this backward step. 25 years ago, in 1963, when the late Willard Bowman lobbied successfully before the state legislature to pass the Alaska Human Rights Law creating the commission, the state budget was $151.6 million, and the commission was funded. In 1978, when the late Representative Lisa Rudd fought for the creation of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, now the Alaska Women's Commission, the state budget was $1.1 billion and the commission was funded. I have a historic footnote, but I won't take the time. I'll send that to you about the fact that we did have a commission on the status of women, and it was abolished because it didn't work. I mean, it was put in with the Human Rights Commission, and it was then
That was the reason why the law was passed in 1978, to have it separate. In 1988, the state operating budget was $2.3 billion. Surely the sum authorized in fiscal year 1988 for these three agencies independently cannot be used as an excuse to consolidate their responsibility. Only last year, the legislature passed the Disabled Bill of Rights, strengthening the case for the physically and mentally disabled to file complaints of disability discrimination. By making changes in the administration of the Human Rights Commission, before the regulations are adopted, you not only confuse those handicapped people you promised to help, but employers, landlords, and others who must comply with the law. Moreover, the merger proposal does not take into account the basic conflict in the roles of the three agencies. Clearly, the merger bill does not save state dollars, and in fact may cause the loss of federal funds obtained by the Human Rights Commission from the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunities Commission. This year, those funds amount to $103,000, about 10% of the Human Rights Commission's budget. Indeed, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, saving state funding or creating a more efficient civil rights organization is not the issue. Sustaining a strong civil rights program in the state is the issue before you. The commission, therefore, urges you to take a strong stand for human rights, for equal employment opportunity in state government, and for Alaska's women by voting against SB 488 and SR 27 and supporting the passage of House Bill 4. Who can measure the loss to the state of denied human potential? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Edna.
Yes, thank you, Senator Fisher and the committee members for allowing us to testify. First of all, Paul, I'd like to say that there are 10 women here with me that, for the majority of them, this is their first time testifying. Some of those had to leave because of time constraints, but they are all opposed to House Bill number 4, and they will be sending you written testimony as well as POM. And the other thing I guess I'd like to say to you is, as I know, throughout the state of Alaska, there are many other women that wanted to testify and was not able to. So that if you are considering moving House Bill 4, that you would give them ample opportunity. Because I know that there are many people out there that do want to voice their opposition to House Bill number 4 and voice their approval for the private organization. And so we would, I would appreciate your consideration for that. And due to time constraints, I will say just thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's what we will do. I mentioned that at the beginning of the meeting. We're going to go real quick to Fairbanks, then one in Petersburg, and then back here and close it out. And I apologize to everybody in those communities that showed up today and there's just no time. So in Fairbanks, we have two folks. It'll be Barbara Tyndall and Amy Harris. In Petersburg, it'll be Evie White. So go ahead, Fairbanks, please.
My name is Barbara Tyndall, and I'm a wife and a mother and a third-year resident of Alaska. I'm here today along with at least five other people who are opposing HB 4, not because I'm opposed to helping women, but because I felt that this commission does not adequately represent the views and concerns of the majority. I am in support of SB 488 and SR 27, but I especially like the idea of the private sector handling women's problems. The Alaska Coalition of Women, of which I'm a member, I believe can adequately and more effectively, cost-effectively address the needs and concerns of women. And I think that it has tremendous potential because across the state there are so many women. We have drawn a variety of women from all walks of life, from all a vast majority of variety of experience. Women with legal ability, homemaking ability, childcare ability, women helping women. And I just really applaud the efforts of the women who have put this coalition together. I believe that women are more in touch with women than any state agency or commission could ever be. And they are our neighbors. They are our co-workers. We are side by side, and we can see the needs of women, and we can address them and meet them equitably. And I just strongly urge you to oppose HB 4 and go instead to the private sector. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy Harris?
Thank you. My name is Amy Harris. I'm a chapter leader for Concerned Women of America in the North Star Borough. This group represents over 800,000 women nationwide, and there's 700 in Alaska alone. We are opposed to HB 4. I belong to a majority of women in Alaska that the Alaska Women's Commission does not represent. I'm opposed to my tax dollars supporting a budget supply these women around the state claiming they represent me. They do not represent me.
I belong to an organization called the Alaska Coalition for Women also, that more accurately represents myself and the vast majority of my acquaintances. This organization has an impressive record of helping women in the state who do not discriminate against certain women, as the Alaska Women's Commission does. I encourage all legislators to support SR 27 and SB 448 for more effectively spending our tax dollars and eliminate excessive government waste. But furthermore, I urge you to pass these women's issues to the private sector and curtail government intervention. Thank you.
Question. Hey, thank you. Peter Berg, Evie White.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Pardon? Yes, go ahead.
Christy, and I'm speaking for Roxanne Lee, my aunt, who had to go back to work.
Oh, you
can you hear me there?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Government.
This is
Roxanne
Lee,
representing
Mrs. Roger
LePage.
And also there were 7 people here, and 8 people here, who don't support our House Bill 4. This is her testimony. My name is Roxanne Lee, spokesperson for 8 supporters of House Bill 4 in attendance at the Legislative Information Office, and former member of the Alaska Women's Commission. The Women's Commission is the only agency in state government that speaks to the government about issues, policies, and situations affecting Alaskan women. At the current price of oil, only 9 minutes of pipeline flow would fund the entire annual budget of the Alaska Women's Commission. We urge you to support House Bill 4 continuing the Alaska Women's Commission as it is currently constituted. $250,000 is a small amount of money to budget for health for all Alaskan women. And that is her testimony. I myself, Julie Hersey, work in a mental health center here in Petersburg, and I want to say that people come there and they don't have any money. Women from broken homes, women who are in abusive situations, they couldn't find help from private people. They're trying to have private health here instead of our state-funded mental health. Most people couldn't pay those fees, so I really wonder how...